You're listening to The Pulse on University Radio Nottingham.
So I think this is quite an important story to mention. I don't believe it's been particularly picked up in the British media, although I think they're quite hesitant to touch stories like this, given how they're beginning, unfortunately, to become part of culture wars. But it's concerning an Irish teacher called Enoch Burke, who refused to call one of his pupils by the pronouns that they identified as, that being they, them, and was subsequently jailed and then let out by the judge as it was believed that he began to profit off the sort of arguments he was making, which was based in his Christian faith. And since then, the teacher has returned to the school to sort of protest against his dismissal. And he's come along with all his family, and I think that's quite a very much important part of this story, because initially when I started hearing about this a few months ago, I just thought it was just this one guy by himself. But if you look at the sort of family, there's 10 of them. They were all homeschooled, educated by themselves, very much, I would argue, indoctrinated into this Christian, not necessarily the bad way of teaching it, but very much wrapped up in a certain view of the world that perhaps may inspire hatred, not because of the faith itself, but because of perhaps how some people use faith as an instrument of hatred. And that appears to be perhaps the way that he and his 9 other siblings were brought up. And they've all gone on to be very, very successful people and have all got multiple degrees and have got into quite high levels of some parts of Irish society. And I just think it's quite an important story to talk about in general, because this is becoming an increasingly important issue, because as more people are able to access services like these to find that they be able to truly identify as themselves, and I believe that's a very positive thing in today's society, there will always be this pushback by more conservative figures. And this one in particular has such a sort of, is powered by such hatred that it makes me feel genuinely uncomfortable, the sort of attention and support that he's getting. And to my question to the panel is, should he sort of be allowed to express these views? You know, they come from his own religious beliefs concerning his own faith and the way he was brought up. Is this part of freedom of speech, or is this just hatred?
Well, I mean, the thing that really struck a chord from what you were saying, Scarlett, was essentially the idea that somebody like Enoch Burke has been indoctrinated. And that is a very interesting term, because the Burke family themselves, in response to a play entitled The Kinds of Sex You Might Have at College, claimed that the play was part of a quote-unquote mass indoctrination of the Irish people with humanistic ideas about sex. I mean, I'm not going to, in what I'm saying, necessarily take a view on that stance in and of itself, although I do have them. However, the thing that really it points out to me is when both perspectives thinks that the other side is indoctrinated, how do we ever come to a situation of clarity, or a... I don't think a centre ground's the right way of putting it, because at the end of the day, there's sincerely a point about this just being about transgender people's right to exist, essentially. But how do we ever, you know, come to an equitable situation?
Well, I think it just sort of plays into the continuing issue of sort of political polarization that is being witnessed in sort of most Western democracies. And the fact that people are no longer able to come together and discuss on issues is, you know, a massive problem.
But there's a question about whether that's actually a thing. I feel like it's a very sort of buzzwordy thing to say no one really talks to each other anymore. I think to a certain extent...
I would disagree. I would say that, you know, sort of when you look at sort of the, say, for example, if you look at sort of American or British politics in sort of the 1950s, you know, you have sort of this era called the post-war consensus where parties agree on sort of a base set of what the ideals and what sort of the, you know, what the UK should look like. And it's only sort of differentiations and sort of little implementations, little bit of, you know, more social ideas, a little bit more conservative ideas, you know, but they had the same base idea set. I think, unfortunately, what we're seeing now in sort of modern society is that each group is sort of so atomized from each other that they don't have the same base beliefs anymore, you know, because I think this is a very sad case because, unfortunately, you know, I sort of come from the camp where, you know, the sort of non-binary student should absolutely be respected because it is simply a matter of their identity. It is their right to be treated and respected the way that they wish to be sort of perceived. But unfortunately, you know, that is just not the same base assumption that, you know, gentlemen such as Enoch Burke have. You know, they have a completely different worldview to that. And unfortunately, that just makes sort of rational, you know, debate between myself and, you know, perhaps the teacher, you know, completely impossible. And I think it's just sad.
I would dispute the idea that there is no centre ground anymore. I believe there is still enough people within the centre ground that have legitimate discussions that do not start talking about ideas of indoctrination. What I'd argue is that there are more extremist voices, not necessarily more extremist voices, but they are being given more of a platform than they used to, and they're amplified by social media plainly, and the way that even humanity sort of gravitates towards being angry all the time. And, you know, these aggressive like emotions of hatred attract more people, which I think says something a lot about human society, that we're all in these tribes and it's more about hating the other side than actually looking inward and thinking, hang on, how can we actually fix our own society?
I would agree on some level. I think, you know, that individuals certainly do have, you know, constructive conversations about this, but I do think there is a wider societal problem where it is very polarised. This case is, you know, I think this guy sounds awful, and the way he's, you know, his views, I do not agree with his views. I'm not, you know, I think they're very homophobic, transphobic as well. However, I do feel that often people can be a bit, on both sides, can be quite narrow-minded about this issue, because I think there are some people who, you know, are not at all transphobic. They completely respect trans people. But equally, you know, I think certain, for example, this the gender recognition bill that was tried, you know, that Scotland tried to pass, I think there's been a lot of people who perhaps haven't agreed with that bill and everything in it, and they've been labelled transphobic for their views, when actually there's a very fine line. You know, you can disagree with the stuff in the bill but still respect trans people. And I think there's often, you know, people have overgeneralizations about this topic, and I think that's quite toxic, because you know, there are lots of different angles you can take on it. And yeah, so I would disagree with the fact that I don't think in wider society, I think it unfortunately has been very polarized and narrow-minded, and people, you know, automatically make assumptions about people on both sides without really listening to what exactly, you know, the specifics of what their views are.
Well, the gender recognition bill was in Scotland was modelled off similar bills that have passed, such as the one in Ireland. And what I find quite interesting is that supposedly, you know, Scotland believed that their society was at a point where this bill could have passed. And similarly, with issues such as abortion in Ireland, their society came to a point where it was a non-issue, and supposedly gender recognition appeared to be a non-issue, seen as this bill, the one that Scotland tried to pass, was passed in Ireland 8 years ago. But it shows that the amount of support that Enoch Burke has got, especially on social media, has sort of revealed something of the underbelly of society. And I think, go on, Rachel.
No, I was going to say, like, I think social media is an interesting point, because social media works on algorithms. Like, if you interact with a certain amount of content, then you will get more of that content, because social media wants more engagement and that. I think yeah, we all know that group of people exists. We all know, like, we've discussed just now about the two different groups of people, and we are, I think, with, as you like, with social media, will, like, are those beliefs exaggerated? Possibly. But I just think, like, in terms of social media and all that kind of stuff and how much exposure each group has to one another, it's very specific. And I just think that if there are ways of where we can get exposure from, like, about the different group in a way that is more controlled, like, if we're drilling down to the core of both, like, both polarizing groups, both of them are mostly just to do about love. Christianity is a religion that spreads love, spreading God's word, spreading love to other people and all that. I don't know.
I'm not going to be vocally anti-Christian. I question the institution of religion in that particular way. I don't doubt that in some base level there is a desire for it to be about love, but the interpolation of that and the mass institutionalization of that, I think, potentially puts that in jeopardy.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily speaking about the institution of Christianity. I'm talking more about, like, the religion as a whole, you know. So, like, if...
But Enoch Burke has used Christianity as a basis for his hatred.
Yeah. And, like, I'm not defending Enoch Burke and his actions at all. I'm just stating the fact that Christianity as an idea should be based on love. Whether that's carried out or not, that I don't, like... It's rocky ground, as you're saying. But then, like... Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I've not argued my case very well at all. But, like, that's fine. We move. I think just both sides, like... more love needs to be there. Yeah. I think that's I'm going to put a pin in it.
I think Hannah's point from earlier is one that sort of I actually very much resonate with, sort of this idea that every sort of debate nowadays is almost sort of an us versus them. There's no sort of room to have nuance anymore. And this is partly sort of a problem due to sort of a rise in populism within sort of Anglosphere democracies. You know, you see leaders such as Nigel Farage, the Brexit campaign, Donald Trump, all of these leaders are very much us versus them. And so sort of that kick-started the issue of, you know, having no more nuance. It's either you're with us or you're not. And I think that is just sort of a systematic problem that we're having to face, a reduction in nuance in society.
I do think that in this studio, we as a group of five need to sort of address our own positionality in that position, because it's very easy for us to... sort of, you know, take a slightly holier than thou. Isn't it sad that no one can debate each other when obviously we are all different people and have somewhat different backgrounds, but broadly speaking we are one side of the debate, and that we need to be mindful of the fact that we are more than not one side of it. So it's very easy for us to go, why can't people agree, when we largely, I'm not saying on every issue, have similar perspectives.
Sorry, Hannah.
I was just going to say, I'd come back on that. I'm happy to admit that I actually didn't agree with the gender recognition bill. I'm just going to put that out there, because then that kind of puts me in a different, slightly different perspective. But I, you know, that's why I was speaking about that, because I completely respect trans people. I want them to have as much, you know, all the same rights as everybody else. I have nothing, you know, I have nothing but love for trans people, but I didn't agree with the bill. That's kind of why I was speaking about what I was speaking about earlier.
So what is it within the bill that you disagree with?
I disagree with the fact that people could the lowering of age for changing your gender. I don't agree with self ID particularly, because I think I just don't, and I don't agree with shortening the time that you have to live within your the other gender. I don't agree with that, and I know that puts me in a controversial position, but that does not, you know, I feel like a lot of people who feel that have sort of been labeled as being transphobic.
I think there are legitimate criticisms of the bill, but a lot of it has been founded within perhaps the MPs like Rosie Duffield, who do articulate again their argument in sort of terms of hatred. They come across very, very angry, and you've properly articulated
that edge of it. But I suppose that sort of runs the risk of sort of painting anyone who criticises the bill as all one and the same, which sort of reduces the ability.
Well, that's what happened. But when you have these loud voices that just perpetuate hatred, they are the ones that are going to be the loudest and are going to reach the most people, because that's how humans respond.
I would just come back on that, and I don't feel personally that Rosie Duffield has been like that. I think she has been loud, but I feel like she's almost had to be, because she's been drowned out by other people in her party who have essentially ostracized her and labeled as transphobic. I've seen interviews with her where she's, you know, very, very clearly said she is not transphobic. She loves and respects trans people. So I mean, there are definitely figures who, you know, have been very angry and loud about it in the wrong way, and that's not the way to go about debate, but I actually don't see her as one of those figures. I admire her.
In a world where SU election candidates roam free, where your learning is interrupted by lecture shoutouts, where internationally recognized brand names and trademarks are abused willy-nilly, only one team can prevail. They question the policies. They get to know the candidates. They breathe elections. They sleep elections. They eat at Mooch elections on URN.